Nechia v'nireh. People were very impressed with what happened because they made a movie out of it, a video, and it played very well. It became tangible. In other words, when you raise money for a cause, and it's not real, min retten veltverein, if you know Mama Lashon. But when you see 13 young ladies and the trip begins in this classroom and what happened during the other 2 weeks, it plays. All right, I'm ready to begin. I really am thwarted. I spoke to the Kollel on Thursday. I thought maybe I'll attract. It's just amazing how I can't walk Dalet Amud anywhere in the world without being accosted by people who swear they're my students, tell me every joke I told the last 20 years. And in the Kollel, it's beyond words. It's a waste of time. Rakefet, who needs to know this? Who's interested? Who has time? You have to do Gemara and Halacha. Okay, Poseidon. Let's live with reality. There's a lot to talk about the trip. I'll leave that for other times. Let me teach in after class for my students that have honored me with your presence for so many years, and even a sub-student who heard me for so many years. I have a gift for everyone in my office. Today is Sunday. Today is Monday, September 2nd, 2019. Very hard for me to believe 2019, not 1919, but Nazegetas. I want to say hello to all the wonderful students in front of me and to all those listening across the wide expanse of the Jewish universe. Once again, I thank you very much for your kind comments, and I'm overwhelmed by some of the things that were said, but halavai, I should live up to what you think of me. Okay. Now, going back in time, in relation to Rav Moshe Feinstein, did he read the New York Times? Didn't he read the New York Times? So here's a source that definitively says he read the Yiddish press from cover to cover every day. It seems what I had in my head, the New York Times, is incorrect. I won't swear to it, but that's what I was told many years ago. The Rav did read the New York Times, and that's no secret, because he referred to it many times in his public drashot. Okay, so that's in relation to past history, and anyone interested can take it later. When it comes to, we're in the middle of the Big Three is a name, again, I gave many sources, I see a new face sitting there. So everything I'm speaking about, Ellie, you can check out with the past lectures. But the Rav said to Rabbi Beryl Rosenzweig, your son growing up, that's your cousin, Michael Rosenzweig, Gaon b'Yisrael. So the Rav said to Beryl, the father, who does your son look up to? When you were growing up, you looked up to the Big Three. I quote this in the Rav. The Rav, by the way, my work on the Rav was quoted in Torah Tidbits. Steve Glazer said to me, I look at Torah Tidbits to see how many Shiva calls I have to make during the week. And Steve Glazer said it to me. He says, you've been quoted. So until I found it, but I was quoted, the Rav was quoted, Baruch Hashem. So I quote this in the Rav. So the Rav says the Big Three you looked up to were rabbis Young, Goldstein, and Lichtenstein. Your son looks up to Rashi Yeshiva. It's a change in the climate. Okay. Now, about the Big Three, I got a Talmud of mine, a fabulous Talmud, Rav Nachman Shmayahu. He's a Chabadnik, but the Chabadnik and my associate would all walk on the ground and are firmly in the camp of the real world, the Torah world. And I wish he would study at Bernard Revel and get a PhD. He has an ability for research. So he went through the files of Rabbi Young, and he said, I did not do Rabbi Young justice. The letters he sent me, I have them in there, of his involvement with everything in Europe and in Israel. This man was all over. And I agree, I didn't do justice. We'll leave it for someone to do a definitive doctorate on Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. But the question again begs us, and I alluded to this last term, and I want to be even clearer. Of the Big Three, there's no question that Rabbi Lichtenstein, he was involved in his shul and in education. You will come to Rabbi Lichtenstein, Ramaz. You don't realize what an innovation Ramaz was at the time. And he was involved with Bar Ilan. You come to Rabbi Goldstein. Rabbi Goldstein, yes, he was involved with the shul, Harlem, the parades on Sunday, the Billy Sunday lectures, and his father-in-law, Harry Fischel, the charities in Israel. But you see, I think there are two factors, and please, I hope someone is listening who will do a doctorate on Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. I think there are two factors here. One factor is the ilk of his balabatim. It's not just that there were frum people on the Upper West Side. There were frum people on the Upper East Side. It didn't appear to the Upper West Side. The Upper West Side, the Lower East Side, a lot of frum people. Vic grew up there. My cousin, my wife's cousin, Norson, grew up there. All right? He's one of the donors towards doing good things today. So they grew up on the Lower East Side. My family, I yet remember visiting the Lower East Side in 1940, 41. And as a kid, I was flabbergasted. There were bathrooms in the hallway. There were no bathrooms in each apartment. I still remember visiting my father's uncle, Uncle Ike. Then they moved on. All right, those who moved to Brooklyn and were always, Brooklyn was always frummer than any other borough. They weren't the wealthiest Jews. The wealthiest moved uptown. And the east side, Ein HaChinami, as we'll see, Kehillat Jeshurun, the upper west side not only had wealthy Jews, but Jews that cared. You had Balabatim in Jewish Center and Rabbi Young Shul, who were world-class personalities. Their charity went all over the world. The European World War I, post-World War I, the Joint Distribution Committee, the Central Relief Committee, Israel, so that the Balabatim, they themselves were involved in international Jewish affairs. They were happy to have a rabbi who was involved. Don't forget what I told you with Louis Bernstein. Rabbi, and this is a much later generation. Again, I'm a youngster compared to some of you, but that's only in spirit. In reality, I'm the eldest person in this room already. And I knew Louis Bernstein. I knew him intimately. He was a fabulous guy, and he cared, and he was all over the world and fighting for Jews. So I meet his president, Kamen Aliyah. I don't know if, I hope the president's still alive. For a while he rented right near me in Dublin, and my home shul is Ohel Rivka. And I say to him, you had a great rabbi. And he says to me, yeah, he was a great rabbi when he wasn't in the shul. And boy, was he furious. The rabbi was all over the place. He three times elected president of RCA, the only one in history. We'll talk about Louis Bernstein later this term, Bezrat Hashem, but the Balabatim didn't tolerate it. I can tell you, and please don't record it, don't write it, but what can I say? The truth is the truth. Joe Lichtenstein was rebuked by his Balabatim. You know what we're talking about in Kehillat Jeshurun? When you say Baruch Hu, you're saying Baruch Hu with $30 billion next to you. He was rebuked because he made long-distance calls to Bar Ilan University with the shul phone. And how do I know this? From one of the Board of Trustees members who became my very, we became very close friends. He should live and be well. He's not well today. But he told me this decades ago. Joe Lichtenstein rebuked. Listen to what I'm saying to you. The man who, more than anyone else, helped build Bar Ilan University. Rebuked. But this is one reason. I hold, I'm absolutely right, but you know, when you say theories, you have to be humble. Maybe I'm 90% right. There's a second part to the coin. New, can anyone help me? Where was Rabbi Goldstein born? The Lower East Side. Joe Lichtenstein was born in Europe, but he came to America a little kid. How much did he remember of Europe? They're both American products. Rabbi Goldstein, 100% blueberry pie. Rabbi Lookstein, 90% cherry pie. Ah, Rabbi Young, Hungary, Germany, England. When he comes to America, he's already a finished product who has been all over the world. For him, what's going on in the Jewish world is his backyard. Doesn't matter if it's the Upper West Side, or if it's Palestine, if it's Poland, he's there. It's his home. Hungary, Germany. Okay, so with these two factors in mind, I challenge Ellie, maybe you'll get involved and you look for a doctorate. Look what my doctorate did for me. Suggest Rabbi Dr. Leo Young, a critical study. I'm throwing that, I don't mean critical in the sense of being critical, but a scientific study. That's the word we use in graduate school, a critical study. That's why I can't do a biography on the Rav. My biography, which is the introduction to the insights of the Rav, where you don't see one word of Rakefet, it's all the Rav I'm quoting word by word. That's why it's such an honest work. But the biography is like an introduction. It's just facts, but there's no analysis. I can't analyze. I can't give an analysis. Do you understand why?
No.
I'm subjective. It's my Rebbe. You, 100 years from now, and it can't be done before, 50 years, 75 years, I know what I'm saying. You will then say, you will be proud to have known Aaron Rakefet, but certain things will happen in the Jewish world that is not cannot happen now. Then you can do a critical study of the Rav. Now it's time to do a critical study of Rabbi Young. But I hold that this can guide you. Yes, who do I have here?
Nissan Hershkowitz.
Nissan.
From the Poalei Agudah of America. The only one in the whole Western Hemisphere, I'm what's left of it. Could you spend a few moments, if you're familiar with Rabbi Dr. Leo Young's connection to Pi, because I remember...
No. We spoke about it last term. I can't... it's all there. But Ein Hachinami... So you want to know something? You talk about Poli, I go to Israel. You're preaching to the choir. Who you talk about? Poli, I go to... Let me tell you a little story. The other day, tourists were here from America, and it's tourists who wine and dine us, so we invited them. And with tourists, everything always goes wrong. I made up a time to meet them. I made up where to meet them.
I'm a tourist.
So we made up to meet opposite. I'm going to wait for them opposite the president's house because they live, they're staying a half block away and 5:45. I get there 5:35. I wait till 6. No tourists show. I tell the God, you know, it's Israel. I go over to the God. I say, Taseli Chesed Katan. And I explain to him, a guy who didn't know what to do for me. There's people here are so good. I saw some idiot left a note here. Reasons to come in Aliyah. Reasons not to come. Let's be part of the summer program. Reasons not to come. The people are fresh. People are fresh. You asked for directions in Lawrence, we asked on Shabbos, and we compared it to what would have happened in Israel. Israel won 10-1. People are fresh. All right, so they're fresh, so come and teach them to be more mannered. But when push comes to shove, they're fabulous. So the God promised me he'll tell them how to get to my house, 18 Berlin. No, they don't show. I call. I have to call them via America yet. The chutzpah, their American phones. You got to call America to call the Shmendrek who's 4 blocks away from you. So finally it turns out he wrote down 6:15, not 6:15. And where are they waiting for me? They're waiting for me in front of Van Leer Institute. They thought that Van Leer Institute is right next to the president. I said, Van Leer Institute, some wealthy Jew in Switzerland who wanted their name immortalized. They built an institute there. No one knows what it's doing. The place stands empty 24 hours, 7 days a week. Van Leer Institute, all right, it has a few activities. Fine. Now, I went out to look for them again. I go out to look for them again. There's a young lady walking up the steps, if you know the area, from Berlin to Chalap, Ben Elie, Ben Avi, what's it called? It's named after Avichai, whatever the street is called. It's out of my mind now, but it's a famous name of Hebrew, the son of the Yehuda Ben Eliezer's son. What was his name? Nu, help me out. Yehuda Ben Eliezer's son. All right, anyway, so this girl says to me, Ma Shlomcha? I look at her, a girl about 20, 21. So I say, At Makirhalti, At Talmidashali, and I didn't know, I haven't taught women for many years already. Maybe she's a subtime, but she spoke to me in Hebrew. And no, she says, Lo, Ani Rak Shalel, Shalelet. So I was so moved, so I struck up with me, Eifat Omedet, Amato Saz, Alecha, Shirit Lumi, Hilom, Eifat Garab, Hilomedet, Biyad Binyamin. Beit Sefer Gavoha L'Nashim. So I told her, she looks at me, and I, you know, the way I look with my baseball hat, in a million years, she's not going to guess that this guy knows a little bit of Shas and Preskim. So she looks at me. I say to her, Tein ani makir et hamakom, Pieland. She looks at me, Pieland. Polei Agudat Yisrael land. She couldn't believe she met a Jew who knew what Pieland meant. And Pieland was exactly Rabbi Young, because he and Rabbi Goldstein were caught between two opposite poles, Agudat Yisrael and Mizrahi. And Poli Aguda was the perfect answer. Now, let me go further. You'll catch it. Let me go further. Rabbi Goldstein was the Rabbi Riskin of his time, totally innovative and meeting the needs of the young people marching in Harlem, building a shul, inspiring Shmirat Shabbat, everything we spoke about. And we mentioned the day camp that he organized in the West Side Institutional that the children of Rabbi Yosef Breuer went to that day camp. And I received an email from our dear student, give him his title, PhD from Harvard, not a small matter, Charlie Hexter. And Charlie confirms he is related with Jiddish Machatenimshaft to the Breuer family. And Charlie confirms that absolutely the children of Rabbi Breuer attended the day camp. And Charlie, if that's not enough, I'll bring a second aide. The name Dr. Ralph Silverman mean anything to you? Rabbi Breuer's grandson? Also, a sub-Talmud of Aaron Rakefet. He checked with his aunts, his grandmother, his mother, and his aunt, and they both confirmed that they went to the day camp. I actually wrote to him a letter for his aunt. I haven't gotten a response yet. He said that his aunt is totally with it, and he spoke with her about recording some of her experiences growing up with Rabbi Goldstein and others. So we'll see what happens. I suggested that a grandson record her, and with the magic of the modern day, send it on to Gris Kolel, and we'll be able to do something with it. Now, but more than that, and here we're moving further. He organized clubs. You have any idea what clubs are about? A shul, you want to attract. Remember, it's not America. Again, when you study Torah history, you have to put yourself back in America of the 1920s, the 1930s. It's not today. Today in America, you have shtibble on top of shtibble. Big shuls. I take a look at Young Israel of Two Gardens Hills, once had hundreds and hundreds of people on a Shabbos morning. An idiot named Rakefet spoke there Sunday night a few weeks ago. They said it was the biggest crowd they got in the shul since Yom Kippur. So you can draw your own conclusions. There are 50 shtibbles to walk from Young Israel of Queens Valley to Young Israel of Two Gardens Hills. There are 50 shtibbles along the way. Not only that, a block from where I was staying, Motzei Shabbos, there's a minion on the street. They think they're in Yerushalayim. No wonder they're not coming in Aliyah. I couldn't believe it, a minion on the street. But in the 1920s, the 1930s, There were almost no yeshiva. No one heard of going to yeshiva. You had to be particularly pious to send a kid to a yeshiva. It was called the Yeshiva Parochial School. Today it has a more American name, a day school. So you want to keep the kids in the synagogue. Wasn't this the idea of Mordechai Kaplan? The synagogue has to be a social center. Do you know that the synagogue in Harlem, at its height, Herbert S. Goldstein had 67 clubs going during the week. 67. And the most famous club was the Benny Leonard Club. And now we'll see why I refer to myself as part of the Playcuts of Rehem. I don't know who's the oldest gentleman here, but Charlie, will begin with you. Benny Leonard mean anything to you?
No.
Okay, now you have someone who's a decade behind me, okay? He admits in public, Benny Leonard, I'm Haaretz. Okay, Morty, Benny Leonard, unbelievable. Vic, Benny Leonard, all right, I'm not going to go further. Hank Greenberg, mean anything to you? Hank Greenberg. Benny Leonard was the most famous Jewish athlete until Hank Greenberg took over. Benny Leonard was welterweight champion, lightweight champion, no, first welterweight champion of the world. Later in life he came back and I think he won another title, you can check it out, lightweight champion of the world. Boxing was a major sport that attracted Jews. There were Jews that boxed with Mug and Dovitz on their boxing trunks. This is well known. The street I was looking for is Itamar Ben Avi. That's the name of the street. Yehuda, that's the name of Elizabeth Ben Yehuda's son. Itamar Ben Avi, and the continuation, next time have it play Hatikva, please. And the continuation of the street is Rehov Hanasi, the president's residence. So Benny Leonard, who did they come from? Harry Houdini. Remember we spoke about Harry Houdini? Their parents were from Jews. Hank Greenberg, my father played Sandlot baseball with Hank Greenberg in Crotona Park. All right, today I wouldn't go back to Crotona Park by day or by night. I'd be frightened even by day. But then Crotona Park was all Jews. The Greenbergs lived around the corner. My father lived on 174th in Washington, and I think the Greenbergs lived 174th, a block or two more east, close to Crotona Park. From homes, 100%. And Benny Leonard, the shul he didn't daven in, was an Orthodox shul, and he would come in, Herbert Goldstein knew how to utilize him. Now, do you know what it meant to a kid? I shook hands with Joe DiMaggio in 1947. I write about it in Washington. I didn't want to wash my hands for weeks afterwards. I didn't want to take a bath. This hand shook hands with Joe DiMaggio. Could you imagine Shabbos morning, Nudie, do you read Washington or not? I drove my Zadie crazy. We'd be walking to shul on Washington Avenue. We reached Washington in corner Tremont. My grandfather had to wait at the corner. I had to walk down three stores and look in the window. It was a bridal shop. And in the window was a large picture of Hank Greenberg. And in green ink, he wrote in to my dear aunt and uncle with names, all good wishes and success in your bridal shop. Your loving nephew, Henry Hank, in quotation marks, Greenberg. I see it before my eyes. No, you know what it meant to kids? Benny Leonard. Until Hank Greenberg, he was number one welterweight champion of the world. How did we grow up? I grew up. I write about it in Washington. We were attacked by Catholic kids on Sunday morning. They beat the heck out of us. We didn't fight back. We were little Jewish kids frightened of our shadow. I remember one time there were nuns at the the bus stop. So I said to them, you saw those kids attack. So the nuns told us, you're making a mistake. They would attack us too. They wouldn't listen to these are ruffians. By the way, we had them arrested. You should know. Ultimately, we complained to the police. The police set a trap, and they were arrested. They were arrested. They were sent to reform school afterwards. De Blasio was not mayor of New York. You couldn't get away with things like this. So Benny Leonard, the Benny Leonard Club. Now, I have to tell you, Benny Leonard's brother, who was a businessman, was one of the board of trustees of Rabbi Goldstein's shul. And you can check this out. Hank Greenberg had a brother, Benjamin Greenberg. If I recall correctly, he was on the board of trustees of Park Avenue Synagogue in Zichron Ephraim. Check it out. That, you see, it was Yiddishkeit. That these guys became world famous. Harry Houdini, Benny Leonard. Pardon me for breaking into Mamalash and Sifil had nishkeblitten from say too much Yiddishkeit is not left over four generations later. But they had brothers who down the line, one day you'll pop up, who knows who you will find, a Jewish kid, a descendant from, this was my great-great uncle. Okay, but this is the strength of Herbert S. Goldstein. He knew how to utilize the talent in his neighborhood. And Benny Leonard, whenever they gave out awards, let's say there was a baseball club and a football club and a basketball club and a soccer club and a tennis club, who gave out the sports awards? Benny Leonard. You can imagine the attention. All right, let's go a little bit further. You see, we didn't touch this last time, and it's important to understand Benny Leonard. I grew up, I still remember people talking about Benny Leonard like he was a god, and I still remember when the Israel and the War of Independence, and people were saying, you know, sitting around, who would ever dream that we Jews would have an army? All right, we have a few boxes, but an organized army, but Benny Leonard's name always came up. And I own I have a mint edition, rebound in perfect shape, of the Jewish Encyclopedia, Funkenwagner's, 1905, 1907, what, first edition, the 12-volume set. How do I have it? In my shul, there was a Kohen, I still remember him well, Jake Rappaport, and a little bit, you know, at times you could see he would shake a little, and the doctor told me he was a boxer, and I read books on Jews and boxing, and he boxed with a mug and dove it on his trunk, and the family wanted to honor the parents, he and his siblings. They had a special edition of the encyclopedia with a dedication page. No, 50 years later, who looked at it? Who needed it? He gave it a gift to the rabbi, and I had a Jew in the shul who was a survivor who made a living out of bookbinding, and he took the 12 volumes, and until today, I can use it for kavod. So I, Jews and boxing, fine.
The paper is absolutely marvelous.
What?
The paper of the Jewish
Society. Yeah, no, the whole thing was that you got to understand that's before computerization to put a work like that together.
And the scholarship was really...
That's what made Louis...
The function in those years, acid paper was used, and you're saying not the Jewish Encyclopedia.
It was very good, the Jewish... But that's what made Louis Ginsberg famous. Louis Ginsberg came to America. No one knew who he was. He was the editor of rabbinic literature. When anyone looked at the Jews and like that, who is this Louis Ginsberg? And that made him world famous. All right. But Rabbi Goldstein was involved with a lot more, all on the local scene. First of all, yours truly, and I believe Rabbi Rubin, we were both his students in homiletics. And Rabbi Goldstein, we were privileged. I had Rabbi Goldstein, I had Rabbi Lookstein, I had Rabbi Young in college, Rabbi Rubin also had Rabbi Young. We were privileged to study with these people. It was like looking at a living legend. And I still remember the drusher I preached. Each one of us had to preach a drusher in front of Rabbi Goldstein. He made comments on it. And I remember I preached the drusher about the watch what I'm about to say, because at the time it didn't register. 70 years later, it hits home between the eyes. I preached the drusha on the Kohen Gadol that he had bells on his garments. What do bells mean? It makes noise. It means when he walked in, when he came in, you heard, you knew. I said, Rabbi, we have to have bells. We have to speak up for Judaism. We have to make noise. We have to attract. You know, I was a kid. My dream was to make every Jew in America a Shomer Shabbos. I never dreamt I'd wind up with nobody and nothing sitting behind the desk and minding my own business. But I was a kid with a dream. And I remember Rabbi Goldstein looking at me. His eyes were shining. Ah, he loved it. In retrospect, I understand why. I was describing Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein. All right, so he taught at Yeshiva. You got to give him all the credit in the world. One of the people, not the organizers, it was organized in 1898, but one of the people who came into the OU and helped it become the greatest institution we have in the United States. The OU, the Kashrut, he was the one who was giving a heksha on the Sunshine Crackers, and he delivered that heksha to the OU, public responsibility, not money-making, but an achrayat to the Jewish community. And here, let me tell you what happened to me a few weeks ago. It's a moment in time. I had this last trip to America was very, very different than any other trip I ever made. And Ani Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu, there were moments that are once in a lifetime. There was a moment in Lakewood, I made Ripley's Believe It or Not Now, the only person to be honored by Lakewood Yeshiva and Chabad 6 days apart. I stress the 6 days. It's not that I changed my thinking in between. It's 6 days apart. But the moment in Lakewood, I'll tell you some other time. But the moment I want to tell you now that fits right in with the lecture, here I am in Shari Tefillah, Far Rockaway. All right, this is the heart of Yiddishkeit and America and the five towns, and I don't have to tell you what I'm talking about, okay? And it's my middle talk. I gave a shiur in the morning, and now it's the Shalashudis. Big, big crowd. People walk from all over. And they wanted me to speak about the Rav in Berlin. You remember I spoke about it here in the Kollel in the past. So I'm speaking about the Rav in Berlin. And I mentioned that the Lubavitcher Rebbe's relationship with the Lubavitcher Rebbe played a big role in his becoming the Rosh Yeshiva NYU. You know what I'm talking about? Because the Rav, there was the attack with the Kashrut, and he's involved, and the scandals and what went on in Boston, and they go to Sarabonim. And there was tremendous opposition to the Rav being appointed to succeed his father. But what swung the vote, and I write this in my new book, you'll see what I wrote and you'll see the source for it, Chaim Soloveitchik, our classmate Chaim, the Rav's son, he's the source. He says that what got my father elected was the Lubavitcher Rebbe had met him when he visited his son-in-law in Berlin, and Reb Menachem Mendel introduced the Riatz to Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi, and the Riatz was blown away by this young man, a Gaon Adir, and he loved the Rav, and he wrote to a Balabas, you'll see the name, it's all in my book, he wrote to a Balabas, you're to see to it that the Rav is elected to succeed his father. And this Balabas was a well-to-do Jew on the Board of Trustees, and he swung the vote. So I mentioned that. And then I paused and I said, look, I want to tell you something. If people will ask me what is the greatest achievement that has happened to Torah Jewry in America, it's the OU Kashrut. And I digressed and I explained to them, you don't know what went on in America. You don't know the machloket. It was not just Boston. It was Boston. It was Chicago. It was every last community. Machloket, New York, the Lower East Side, Brooklyn, machloket, no sense of responsibility to the community. And I said, and look what the OU has established, of the finest hashgacha in the world, community service. No one makes a profit off it. Whatever profit is made goes into NCSY and Yachad. What the OU does, it's unbelievable. And every hashgacha in the world, the chief rabbin, the Eda Charedit, they all work with the OU computer, with every ingredient in the world. I've seen it. I know what I'm talking about. And I go, and then I went back to the lecture. The lecture is finished. Man, everyone is mobbing me, Yashikayach, Yashikayach. And this man, nice-looking gentleman, gives me a big Yashikayach and hugs me. He says, you don't know who I am. Can I introduce myself? He says, my name is Moshe Bain. I say, you're the president of the OU. I said, but now you understand I meant what I said. I didn't know who's in the audience. I quoted the Yoredeya, Messiah Lefi Tumo. Okay? This is Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein. We cannot thank him enough. And this is the Hashgacha. When Dov Zakheim gets back, he was the controller for the OU. He's in America now, Rabbi Zakheim. He'll tell you what we're talking about. That yes, everyone is paid, but no one makes a profit. You have to pay, a rabbi comes. Sometimes you need a rabbi who works full-time in the Hashgacha for that particular plant. Other times it's a Yotzei V'Nichnas. Then there's someone supervising the rabbis. And then you have the people in New York who have to answer all the shilas that come in. The new ingredient, it's endless, the questions that come up. And it's how is it transported, and the oil, and what kind of barrels are used. I don't have to tell you, whiskey, no, the wine barrels, etc. You have to pay. People need to live. They're working for kashrut. But no one, the profit is returned to the Jewish people 100%. And this is just beautiful. And Rabbi Goldstein gets a big yashakayach in this development. Now, with something that was raised a moment ago, Dr. Hershkowitz, whatever, Nissan. First name?
Nissan
is better than any title, take my word for it.
Because Rabbi Hershler, I think
Shmuel
Hershler.
Shmuel Hershler grew up in my lap.
We go
back at Kanayin Hara. I'm very, very proud of him because he grew up here and he's a total YU on the highest level. Okay. Anyway, just what Nissen mentioned before and what I elaborated on, Rabbi Goldstein was caught up between Aguda and Mizrahi. He was just like Rabbi Young on that level. So what's most fascinating is that on one hand, he was very involved in what his father established, Mochon Harry Fischel. Mochon Harry Fischel began, it was headed originally by Professor Shaul Lieberman. This was Lieberman's first employment in Eretz Yisrael. The whole story of Shaul Lieberman, we've alluded to it, it's a very fascinating story of a man who was a Gaon Adir, first cousin of the Chazon Ish. Their mothers were sisters. Not many people, Eli, did you know that? That the Chazon Ish and Professor Lieberman were first cousins. He came to Eretz Yisrael, a Gaon Adir, his photographic memory, went to the Hebrew U, and logically he should have gone on to become a graduate of the Hebrew U, a professor at the Hebrew U, because he got involved with Chachmat Yisrael, Greek and Latin. You're all familiar with his writings, with his greatness. And the head of the department, I don't want to use the word jealousy, but he told him, you're not qualified for a doctorate, and he was basically forced out. There's an Israeli movie that was made based upon this Harut footnotes. If you saw the movie, it's based upon it. It doesn't use the name Shaul Lieberman or Professor Epstein, but that's what it's based upon, that very story. So he wound up working for Mahon Harry Fishel, struggling, and then JTS offered him, by Israeli standards, a fortune with only two classes of teaching a week. And as Professor Liebman said, and believe me, I'm not justifying, I'm not here to say we have a right to go and teach at JTS, but we have to state it clearly. And in my new book, I have a whole piece on the Rav and Professor Liebman. He never became a conservative Jew, he remained totally Orthodox, 100%. At JTS, he created tremendous problems because he was the antithesis of Professor Heschel. Professor Heschel, you know, a Chassidic Rebbe's son, Chassidic Rebbe's brother, and Professor Heschel, philosophy and agada, and Professor Liebman only huraka ras halakha. He looked down upon anyone. To him, Professor Heschel was an amoritz in the full sense of the word. And here, Professor Heschel marching with Martin Luther King, he was the most widely known personality at JTS, but the relations between them, I would say, I'd use the word, were strained because of their outlook. So he was the first director. Afterwards, Professor Agus, whose mother married Harry Fishel Bezivik Sheni, for a little while, did you know this? The Professor Agus, we know Irving Agus, was the head of Harry Fishel. But he wound up in America, he was more in Jewish history, he was not the London that Professor Liebman was. And ultimately it was the son-in-law of Rabbi Herbert Goldstein, my dear friend, Zichrono Levracha, Rabbi Shar Yashiv Cohn. You know him as Chief Rabbi of Haifa. He headed up the Machon Harry Fishel. Now, what's interesting about Machon Harry Fishel, that originally it began as more or less a Mizrahi organization, a Mizrahi institution, I should say. Over the years, it moved much more into the mold of what we would say is Poli Agudat Yisrael. Everyone was at home there, Mizrahi, Aguda people, more open people, Mekas Harav people, Panovich people. It became a finishing school for Dayanim. It specialized in Halacha Lamaisa, in Dayanut. For many decades, it was the only yeshiva in Israel which turned out Dayanim. And there endless Dayanim who were Harry Fishel graduates. They estimate that more than 50% of the Dayanim in the state of Israel were Harry Fishel graduates. In addition, he helped Rabbi Herzog organize what later becomes called the Yad Rav Herzog. They were heavily involved with Rishonim, edited editions, the Encyclopedia Talmudica, and a lot of the money of the Harry Fishel Foundation went into these adventures or these undertakings. And it was Herbert S. Goldstein who visited time and again and served as the conduit, as the channel from Herbert, from the Harry Fishel Foundation to help these institutions in Palestine, in the Torah world. It's a fascinating story. There's another side to the coin too. In life, there are moments when you achieve the maximum, and there are moments when the circumstances are such you're not going to find the outlet that you had for your abilities in the new framework. And it's going to free you to do other things. What am I referring to? In Harlem, Herbert S. Goldstein was involved with the synagogue 95% of his working hours. Harlem was alive, busting with Jews. Someone in my brother's family did the research. We had the census of 1920, 1930, 1940. And there you see my parents, mother and father, little children, 1910 surveyed, a little bit afterwards, 1920, living in the same building in Harlem. My mother and father, the two families later, Harlem filled with Jews, the synagogue alive, jumping. What did we say? 67 clubs, if I remember the number I mentioned. Bernie, the boxer, everyone, sports. Wow. But where did they move to afterwards? Herbert S. Goldstein opened up a branch on the west side. First there was a little branch, no more than the size of an overgrown shtibble. Then they moved a few blocks down to 76th Street and built a beautiful building, West Side Institutional Synagogue. But the mob scenes were no longer there. Harlem emptied out into the Bronx. The reason was simple. The Upper West Side, the Upper East Side were always more expensive neighborhoods. Whatever the reasons were, that's the way it developed. The subways, the transportation, Central Park. Ah, Jew, that's where you live when you've made it, when you've accomplished the American dream, when you're no longer a Kafran. No, who here knows Hebrew slangs? The first word I learned in the army. I used to get up and say, because I had an American accent, so I knew right away the soldiers were, some American idiot. I would say, Ani tafran kamochem. The minute I said that, Ani kaniti otam. No, what does the tafran mean?
With a tough
or
with a ten?
A tafran with a tough. Tough. Tough say, resh, nun. Tafran. Kira? No, you didn't do the army, that's why. Tafran, your pocket is sewn. A lack of money, tafran, ani tafran, litvar, tfirah, ani tafran kamochem. So to go to the Upper West Side, you needed sugar daddies. To go to the Bronx, all right, a little bit better than Harlem, but it was within range. So the West Side Institutional, he had more time. They're already... He had 40% of his working hours were free, and he was able to help Harry Fischel, and you have to be blessed with a father like Harry Fischel, which, again, one of the great, great Jews on the American scene, with all that rabbis can think about and do, you need money to back you up. And Harry Fischel, Mendel Gottesman, Nathan Lamport, these were the big three Balabatim, and his son-in-law was able to devote his time to Harry Fischel, the foundation. In addition, all the other institutions started coming to him from the Aguda scene, from the Mizrahi scene, and he was anxious to help all. And he was a sought-after, after-dinner speaker. All over, there'd be fundraising, banquets, dinners, testimonials, and time and again he would get up and say, my name is Herbert S. Goldstein. And you know the story, we spoke about it last year, last term. His name was really Samuel Goldstein, but he was quite ill, and they added on the name Chaim, which became Herbert in English. And the added name caught on. Generally, when they add a name on when you're sick, so a guy recovers. Who uses Chaim? It's only when he's called to the Torah, Chaim Yaakov. But here, the name Herbert caught on, but still his original name was Samuel, so it became Herbert S. Goldstein. So he would get up in front of the audiences and say, this was Min HaShemayim. My name is Herbert S. Goldstein. Do you know what the S stands for? Schnurrer. Herbert Schnurrer Goldstein. And my role here is to see that you contribute handsomely to this wonderful cause. And this was Herbert S. Goldstein. His wife, Rebecca Fischel Goldstein, was totally devoted. And here too, you have to have nachat, you have to have mazel. All of us here have many children, Knein Hara, and no two kids are the same. It's a fact of life. It's very important to recognize this. One of our great problems I see today in Chinuch, off the OOTD, off the Derech, and everyone is carrying on, and so much is written. You open Mishpacha magazine, you open Bina magazine, even Ami magazine, and all these wonderful magazines, wonderful, I have one tremendous critique, they all go against Torah, because they don't have pictures of women, and that is against Torah. Torah has pictures of women, Adam v'Chava, Avraham and Sarah, Yitzhak and Rivka, etc., etc., and women and men are part of God's world, and to exclude women is mamish tragic. I still can't get over, I still shake when I think of the picture in Ami of the Chafetz Chaim talking to his son, the famous picture, and his second Rebbetzin is standing behind them, and they black out the Chafetz Chaim's wife's face. I tell you, I shake. That's like saying, I don't want to go further. God have mercy. So they're very distant from Torah on that level. One magazine wanted to interview me, do a big article, and I told them I can't do it. Or my wife won't let me into the house, plain and simple. She's frimmer than I am. So she was a very unique, wonderful woman. Very active in the OU. She was one of the founders and president of the women's branch. She herself was a Columbia University graduate, a very intelligent woman, and she was a fabulous helpmate for Rabbi Goldstein. Later in life, she was crippled. She was in a wheelchair. Their last visit to Israel, when he was hitting 70, both of them already were in wheelchairs. She died in 1960, if I'm correct, and he remarried a very fine woman from his congregation, Mrs. Regina Krengel, with whom he spent his twilight years. I think they were married for 10 years, and he died in 1970. So he was a man of great accomplishment, a man who forged the rabbinate in America. After Rabbi Goldstein, I'm going to explain to you in very important lectures that these three, the big three, they created conservative Judaism. You understand what I'm saying? No, in a positive fashion. Until then, the conservative movement tried to play the role that they were orthodox, but modern, a little innovative. And these three individuals, and I'll show it to you, I'll prove it to you, I'll show you court documents. These three individuals showed what it really is to be an orthodox rabbi on the Western scene. And what they were saying was to the others, when you start compromising, you're part of a new movement, the conservative movement. They created it willy-nilly. It wasn't that they dreamt they were doing it, but sociologically and philosophically, in reality, this is what they accomplished. Now, I just want to go one step further than Rabbi Goldstein, and on a personal level, I just want to cite stories on one individual. I'll tell you why. Today, I can be proud of my New York Yankee bottle, and I got to deal with Rabbi Rubin, who grew up in Boston, who doesn't know who Ted Williams was. Yitzchak, what's with him? In life, you make acquaintances. When I was in high school, there was a kid 2 years ahead of me named Barry Lieberman, Barnett Lieberman. And then Barry in yeshiva, and Barry was always caught between two worlds because He was born into a Chabad house, and he studied with the Rav, and he was always, there was Chabad, there was the Rav, there was Chabad, YU, and Barry always had an ability to, he was a good businessman. I remember as a kid in college, the summer, he and his classmate, Malamud, he was then, Malamud today, last name, so they went to a stamp show in Europe, in Germany, I believe, and I remember him telling me about it decades ago, and they bought up all the first covers of the new stamp, the new German stamp, and within a few days, people had to come to them to pay twice what they paid in order to get the first day covers. So that summer alone, they made X thousands of dollars as kids in college in Germany. Later, they went into partnership years later and stamped coins, etc. And Barry should just have a refuah shleima. You know his family. His son-in-law is Adam Mintz, Rabbi Mintz, if that name means anything to you. The other children live here, but Adam Mintz is prominent on the Upper West Side. So Barry always spoke about his uncle, Clarence Lieberman. And he would tell me, if you want to know the greatness of Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein, it's the story of my uncle. And I would listen with one ear, and you know, lo and behold, in the volume I'm quoting to you, and I better mention for the new students, the volume I'm quoting from is The Maverick Rabbi by Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein's grandson, Rabbi Aaron Reichel, if the name means anything to you. That's the volume I'm holding in front of me here, Xerox pages. So, beginning on page 167, he tells the story of Clarence Lieberman. Clarence Lieberman is Barry's uncle. It's the older brother of Barry's father. And this kid was orphaned at an early age, before his bar mitzvah. And as a little kid, he became very close to the synagogue in Harlem, and ultimately very close to Rabbi Goldstein. This kid came from a Shomer Shabbos home. You know what it meant then for a home, a father who didn't work on Shabbos. So this kid saw struggles. Secondly, it is not difficult to imagine how hard it must have been to a believing Jew for a boy of 13 from whom God had just taken his father. And yet this kid bounced back, tall, very important to remember this, you'll see why, strong, and he was a regular at the shul in Harlem. Rabbi Goldstein became not only his rabbi, but became his father's, the father image for this boy. And this kid spent all his time, the clubs we spoke about, and inevitably every night Rabbi Goldstein would visit the shul, see what's going on in the clubs, make a comment here, a comment there, and who would walk Rabbi Goldstein home afterwards? Clarence. Now, in one of the big events, they were dedicating a part of the building, and they renovated it. They had to cover the costs. So this comes back to what I told you, Rabbi Goldstein, the Rabbi Riskin of his era. So they decided on a Sunday, in order to attract attention and get the people to come, they had a parade to the synagogue. What are we talking about, a parade? Clarence Lieberman on a white horse, followed by, quote, the officers of the institutional synagogues, followed by the Hawthorne Protectorary Band, and then by about 300 of the Hebrew school children. So you can see this relationship, but the white horse. Only Rabbi Goldstein would pull something like that off. In my wildest imagination, I can't conceive of Rabbi Zuck the Young with a white horse, or Rabbi Joe Lookstein with a white horse. Impossible. I could conceive of Rabbi Steve Riskin. I don't know if a white horse and his time wasn't the same, but I can only tell you, I've seen Rabbi Riskin. His daughter got married. She was my student. I was at the wedding. She married the son of a YU family from Petah Tikva. And at the wedding, Rabbi Riskin says, "And I love my son-in-law. He knew that my daughter was for him because he and my daughter loved the same song. And now let us sing it for you." And both of them, and I think Steve is also with a kittel, he's with a kittel, under the chuppah. Asukala Akleinim. Remember the rabbi's sons, a little sukkah. The sukkah is, it's a very, very moving song. And remember the winds are blowing, the sukkah is shaking. And the little child, the little girl, is asking her parents, "Will the sukkah blow down?" And they assure her that many winds have blown and shook up the Jewish people, but we survived. It's not going to be blown down. And he did that in public, under the chuppah, with his son-in-law. All that was missing was the white horse. Okay? But there's more. There's more about this Clarence. Again, I just want to show you the relationship. One of the places I spoke at this summer, and big crowds came, I couldn't believe it. I had another moment in time there, was Long Beach. So it turns out Long Beach is not in its prime today, but during the summer it's quite a sight. Long Beach, many of the West Side Jews had homes. For instance, the Bentheim family, they owned property on the water there, tremendous property. I remember from years ago, could be they still have it. And many of the wealthy Jews from the West Side went out to Long Beach. That's their summer home. And when Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur fall early, not like this year it's all late, but when there's no leap year, or the year before a leap year, they don't come back for Rosh Hashanah. They don't come back from Yom Kippur. I need not tell you that it's a big loss of income for the shul. So in 1926, in this particular pre-air conditioning year of 1926, the synagogue had many active members who vacationed in this Long Island Sea Coast resort of Long Beach for the entire summer. So they decided to hold the services out in Long Beach. So Clarence Lieberman took the train over to Long Beach every night for 2 or 3 week period to sell tickets, staying until 9 or 10 o'clock at night. So it gives you an idea how this young man, through Rabbi Goldstein, the whole synagogue became his life. Now more, didn't I tell you a few minutes ago that Clarence Goldstein, if you know Barry in his prime, tall, the family has height. Clarence, tall guy, no? They opened a branch on the West Side. Rabbi Goldstein still lives in Harlem. It's a walk from Harlem, I don't know, 110th, 115th. You're walking down to the 70s, 79, later 76, but it's a walk. Right or wrong, all right, it's in my youth I could do the walk. Not such a big deal, but still it's a walk. What happened in Harlem? Why do they have to have a branch down on the west side, lower west side, upper west side, but lower than Harlem? Why do they have to have a branch? Neighborhood is changing. knew how safe was it to walk through parts of Harlem on your way downtown, particularly early Shabbos morning. How safe was it? So who accompanied Rabbi Goldstein? Clarence Lieberman and Harold Kaplan, another young kid. And both these kids were tall and strong bodyguards. Not only, no one started up with them. Not only was the walk a long one, but the route went through some neighborhoods that even then were not the friendliest to Jews who did not try to hide their Jewishness. Nobody, but nobody, they're quoting Harold Kaplan here, nobody could ever accuse Rabbi Goldstein of trying to hide his Jewishness. On Saturday mornings, in an era when dignity was still looked upon positively by young people, Rabbi Goldstein regularly dressed up in a formal cutaway and top hat, attire not unusual among style-conscious Jews of large cities in that period. That hat, Kaplan recalled, made a rather tempting target, but with Clarence and me around, nobody would dare throw a snowball at the rabbi. So, okay, you capture the feeling who this Clarence was and who Rabbi Goldstein was. It was more than a rabbi. It was basically a father figure to Clarence, and until today, the Liebman family is very makir tova, because that young man needed a father figure, and Rabbi Goldstein became the father figure. So here you have Rabbi Young, you have Rabbi Goldstein, and here is an unbelievable picture that survives. It's all the leading rabbis of Manhattan going back about 60 years. More than 60 years. It's going back exactly 61 years ago. Where is this picture from? This picture is the installation of Rabbi Dr. Jacobowitz, Emanuel Jacobowitz, at the rabbi of the Fifth Avenue Synagogue. And here I can just tell you in parentheses, Fifth Avenue Synagogue began as a shoot-off from Park East, from Zichron Ephraim, from Rabbi Arthur Schneier. What some of the Baalei Batim did not like was the innovativeness. Arthur Schneier, Park East, it was a little bit of too much American atmosphere there. They compromised Halacha, but it was a community part and parcel of the American scene in the full sense of the word. All right, some of the Baalei Batim, they didn't lack for money. We want a shul, a bissel Europeisha, a little bit more European, like Mr. Gris, Joe Gris, who unfortunately he and his brother come to America and become multi-billionaires in America. His brother remained totally from Mr. Gruss, until he was brought to the Rav with a family problem by his brother Oscar. Joe Gruss already was an American, compromises, but the shul he davened in had to be an Orthodox shul with a bit of a European atmosphere of his youth, of his grandparents, of his parents. I knew Joe Gruss. You know, I got this campus from him, so I knew him very well. I don't have time now, but I could relate some of the things he told me. But they organized Fifth Avenue Synagogue, and Rabbi Jacobowitz becomes the rabbi there. He later moves on to the British Empire, chief rabbi. Rabbi Emanuel Rachman comes in, and then Rabbi Rackham goes on Aliyah. But what's amazing about this picture, this is 1958. What's amazing about this picture, the three rabbis in the middle, here they are, Rabbi Young, Rabbi Lichtstein, Rabbi Goldstein. They're the big three. No one dared push them apart. There they are. The others, I identified everyone. At this end is Rabbi Zev Zahavi. He was in Zichron Ephraim, which becomes Park East. This is before Rabbi Arthur Schneier, or maybe Schneier was there already. He was assistant rabbi. It has to be checked. This is Rabbi Louis Gerstein. Anyone know who that was? He's the only one I didn't know personally. He was a seminary graduate who was the rabbi of Spanish Portuguese synagogue. And when people ask, how can Spanish Portuguese synagogue have Rabbi Meir Yaakov Soloveitchik if he's a Litvisha, an Ashkenazi? So you should know they had Israel Gerstein, Louis Gerstein, for many years was also Ashkenazi. They have in Spanish Portuguese today, I understand, a Chacham who paskins in accordance with Sephardic tradition. So he complements Rabbi Soloveitchik. This is Rabbi Teddy Adams, Oheb Tzedek. That was the man who came in. That's the famous shul of Philip Hillel Klein. Alan Schwartz is there today, my Talmud. Then you have Rabbi Goldstein, Rabbi Lichtstein, Rabbi Young, Rabbi Jacobowitz. This is Rabbi Simon Langer, Langer, it's really pronounced. It was a French. He was a French gentleman, Talmud Chacham, very refined. Rabbi Belkin used to refer to him as my rabbi. Afterwards, Orachayim. He's an Orachayim. He's on the Upper East Side. That for Rabbi Schmidman succeeded him. But he, Rabbi Belkin, used to say, this is my rabbi. And this summer, I met his grandson, I believe it is, married to a Talmidah of mine from Michlala years ago. We were the guests in their house. And this is Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld. How does Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld get there? He's Queens. The Queens Mafia is not here. No, who can help me? Brother-in-law to Rabbi Jacobowitz. Fabian's first wife, who died young, was Rabbi Jacobowitz's sister. No. The plane crash is not... she died, Lo aleinu, of cancer, if my memory is correct. The plane crash is Rabbi Schoenfeld's second wife, Ruth, was widowed by her husband dying in a plane crash. It was Motzai Shabbos. The plane took off. These were survivors. They were business people. And they were on the plane. Import-export was like November, so Shabbos ended at 5:30, and this plane took off at 9 o'clock, LaGuardia, and the plane went down in the channel, in the bay. It was not up in the air long. And she was widowed, and she had four children. Rabbi Schoenfeld was widowed with four children, and they made a beautiful shidduch. Ruth and Fabian Schoenfeld, Zichrona Levracha, she's gone. Fabian also needs a refuah shleima, and that's why I appreciate all the bracha I get. Fabian was the president of Poly. You're quoting me. You don't know what happened when he was president. So some kanoi got up at the convention, and he said, "Was for busha for uns? What a disgrace for us! We are having our president. We have a president. Was heißt Fabian?" It's called Fabian. What's my Yiddish name is that? What kind of Jewish name is that? And Reb Lazer Silva got up. Shvaig du Amaretz. Shut up, you Amaretz. Rabbeinu Tam's greatest student. What was his name? Rabbeinu Peter. You got it or not? Ribbono shel Olam Eli. If you're Peter, he can be Fabian. You with me? Kieran, the young man behind, are you a Kollel person? You'll be a regular student. Next week I'll make a class list. I just wish I need Sunday more students. Sunday's more important than today. Today it's lighthearted, jokes, right, wrong. You can't be wrong, you understand? Sunday is Dvar Hashem, Halacha, and it gives you a break. That's a feeling, what we're doing. No, can you invite someone Friday night? It's not black and white. Nothing is black and white. But you'll see next Sunday, Chabad has it there. They, until now, we play games, they're this, they're be Machal Shabbos there. Chabad, they, you'll see the Kuntres, the Sus. All right, yeah. We have arrived. Joseph McStein. Let me give you a brief biography and then we'll fill in. Joseph Hyman Lichtstein. Everyone knew him as Joseph H. Lichtstein. Behind his back, they used to call him Little Joe. I don't know, I think Steve Riskin is taller than Joe Lichtstein. There is a theory that short people have a Napoleonic complex. They want to accomplish, to show that height should not be a factor. And believe me, when you speak of Rabbis Riskin and Lichtstein, you're speaking accomplishment with a capital A. His years, 1902-1979. He was born in Russia, came to America, born in 1902 in Belarus, emigrated to the United States in 1910. So when he came to America, he was a kid of 7, 8, a young kid. Again, most children when they emigrate at that age don't retain an accent. They're able to master the language perfectly. He had a gift with language that's second to none. Per mapik magoliot. His mouth, anything he said was a jewel, was a gem. There's an unbelievable story told to me by Rabbi Kahn, who's a Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Aaron Kahn, right? That's the name of the Rosh Yeshiva in YU, not his brother in Stern, but the one at YU told it to me. When Rabbi Lim appointed him a Rosh Yeshiva, so Yomo knows that everyone was talking about him. It's English. If you've heard Rabbi Kahn speak English, it's beyond words. He's a Harvard graduate twice over, like, with his English. So, he was invited to KJ to give a lecture. And Kilat Jeshurin, Rabbi Lichtstein Shul. And it's like Rakefet, I'll announce a public lecture here at 1 o'clock in the morning. Two people will show up, four people will show up. The Mashkiach, the Mashpia gives a sing and dance here. There are 1,000 people here. Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik is having heart failure just listening to me. Mark, four people, five people show. So he meets Rabbi Lichtstein. Rabbi Lichtstein says to him, Aaron, I heard you had a very poor attendance. And he says, yeah, I don't know, maybe you're balabatim, and, you know, not interested. And it was, the talk was on the brisket derech. No, how many balabatim on the Upper East Side are interested in the brisket derech? So he says, no, it's not just my balabatim. You mistitled it. What did you title it, Rabbi Lichtstein says? The Brisket Derech. It's not going to attract. So Rabbi Kahn says to Rabbi Lichtstein, well, how should it be titled? And Rabbi Kahn described it to me. Rabbi Lichtstein with his hands as if he's writing it in the air. There's more to brisk than tea. Got it? Lipton's tea. The brisk tea. There's more to brisk Venti. That's Rabbi Lichtstein. Obviously, his native language was Yiddish. He probably knew Russian as well, but his English was just superb. It's like Abi Ibn's English. It's just like an actor. It was just glorious English. He went to the City College of New York, later did graduate work at Columbia University. He did not have a doctorate. He had honorary doctorates, obviously, but he did not have a doctorate. got smicha from Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan in 1926. Now, at Gehillat Yeshurun, there always was this tradition of having a rabbi who spoke English. Rabbi Margolius Ramaz, Rabbi Moshe Zvulun Margolius, and we'll come back to him next week. It's very important to understand him, then you can understand Rabbi Lukstein a little better. Ramaz, they loved him. They revered him. But the Balabatim was smart enough, we need someone who speaks English. And in the course of time, you had Mordechai Kaplan, you had Herbert S. Goldstein. His grandson, Rabbi Rachel, wrote to me that he believes that his grandfather was officially the assistant rabbi for a period of about 3 years, in addition to his work in the Talmud Torah, because I remember I spoke about the Talmud Torah, and I said it was also in the shul, but I didn't realize he had the formal title. And then you had Rabbi Lukstein. So Rabbi Lukstein knew the Kehillat Yeshurun situation inside out. He was the English-speaking rabbi there. But there's more to it. If you know the story of Europe, many an important shtela went with the lady. If you took the lady, you got the shtela. No, in the United States of America, tell me where that actually happened. Elizabeth, New Jersey, Rabbi Teitz comes, a greenhorn, looking for a shidduch. Rabbi Eliezer Pearl has just died. And there's a young lady. And it was announced, whoever marries her gets the rabbinic position. And that marriage was magnificent. No, where was it that the marriage didn't work out? Yomo, what do you know by now? You're in the kollel how many decades? No, help me out. Rabbi Chiyo Yaakov Weinberg. No, do you read the Making of a Gadol? I don't need Nassim Kamenetsky to tell me. Zichrono Levracha, it hurts me to say it. But it's true. The Alter of Slabodka was afraid that Rabbi Chiyo Yaakov Weinberg, the greatest Ilui in the yeshiva world 120 years ago, is becoming a maskil. He's learning Russian, learning the language of the land. Oy vey, it begins with Russian, then it's university. Before you know it, he's a professor, and who knows what remains of Shas and Paiskim and Yiret Shemayim. So he made a shidduch, the Bolshevitsky Rav died. And the shtela was announced, whoever marries the daughter gets the shtela, made the shidduch, and that shidduch didn't last. She was a wonderful girl, but compared to him, he was a genius of geniuses. They got divorced, and that's why he ran away to Germany, because in those days, it's not like today, I just met a student of mine, it's a third husband already, can I hurry? Have to start remembering who the first was also a student of mine, who the second was. Now the third, Gutzalapit, and what goes on today. But in those days, the Arav gets divorced, and you should know, she remarried, and beautiful second marriage, children, grandchildren, many living in Israel today, who survived the Holocaust. So it wasn't her fault, but he was a genius. Sometimes geniuses can't work out walking with 10 toes on the ground. It's a problem. So, no, Rabbi Lukstein married the right girl. He married Ramaz's granddaughter. I knew her. Fabulous lady. Schlein was the original last name. So, he was really well positioned. He worked in the synagogue, married the Ramaz's granddaughter. A beautiful marriage. And Kol Zman, that Ramaz was alive, he was assistant rabbi, associate rabbi, English-speaking rabbi. And then, with Ramaz's death, he was a universal choice to become the rabbi. His greatest thrust was not in the rabbinate, was in education. He organized a Hebrew teachers training college for women in 1930. That evolves, it morphs into Teachers Institute for Women, part of Yeshiva University, which evolves into Stern College. My wife still went to TIW. When Stern College began, there were still two different levels. You could go to Stern College or go to any college and take courses in TIW. My wife was an art major in Hunter, but she supplemented with courses in TIW. Ramaz, 1937, was his greatest achievement, with tremendous influence until today on the totality of the day school scene in the United States. Very active for Bar Ilan, its first president, then chancellor, tremendous fundraising, brought in some of the heart of the Balabatim of the KJ area to help put Bar Ilan on the map. Joe Lookstein was a symbol, was an institution. You can't imagine, heads and shoulders above the crowd. Not the learning knowledge of Rabbi Young, perhaps not the frumkeit of Rabbi Goldstein, but he was a shem tova. And as I said to you many, many months ago, and I'll end off with this, and I have a lot to give out, so bear with me today. The fellas from the Kollel, I don't know if you want to stay. When the class ends, it ends. Then I do a number of jokes with the class, you follow? But I don't want you to say to me that we got to go, you know, we're losing out on learning. So if you want to go back. It's not gesund to hate. If you want to stay and listen to the wise Alec comments, you're welcome to. You're more than welcome. Okay. As I said to you many months ago, Rachel Salanta used to boast about his students. And Rabbi Yisrael had three very famous students. And he used to say, one is a chacham, one is a chassid, and one is a lamdan. The lamdan was Rabbi Yitzchak Blaza, the chacham was Rabbi Simchel Zissel Ziv, the Kelma Rosh Yeshiva, and the chassid was Rabbi Naftali Amshtadam. So I said about the big three exactly what Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said. The lamdan was Rabbi Dr. Young. He was a big Talmud Chacham, he translated for Sansino, etc. The chassid was Rabbi Goldstein. He had a shtickle of real, you know, like we would say today, right-wing frumkeit in him. The chacham or the pikeach, no one equaled Rabbi Joe Lookstein. He had that ability, wisdom, smart, to form, to do. The shul, the marriage, Ramaz, TIW. And let me not miss out on another comment. Who else married the right girl? You people don't know the memoir literature, what I have in that closet. Dynamite, dynamite. Who else married the right girl? No, what do you say, Ellie?
Dr.
Eddie. You're absolutely right, but I'm talking within the YU world.
Rabbi Rosenfeld married Leah Young's daughter.
Rabbi Rosenfeld. Rabbi Shmuel Belkin married Rabbi Leventhal's granddaughter, Selma Ehrlich, exactly like the story with the Schlang-Lookstein marriage. And Rabbi Leventhal made two presidents of YU. He made Rabbi Revel president, and he made Rabbi Belkin president. That marriage survived, but it didn't last, unfortunately. Many years later, they got divorced, and Rabbi Belkin remarried, and have Talmidim, grandchildren, great-grandchildren of the original Mrs. Belkin and Rabbi Shmuel Belkin. So to reiterate, first of all, I want to thank everyone for coming today. You made me very happy. I really was upset yesterday. I don't get upset too easily, but I, for me to speak in the afternoon is difficult. I have a certain schedule here. It's not like in America where all I have to do is wind and dine, carried on people's arms, and all I have to do is speak. Here I have a wife, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and a multitude of responsibilities and survival. And I spoke to the Kollel, and yesterday one student honored me with his presence, Ellie Weinstein. And Ellie, you and I are going to be good friends. And we're going to be good friends. And I have gifts for you down the line, too. But not yet. I have to see that the friendship is real and the bond is strong. And what did we do today? We finished out Rabbi Goldstein, Clarence Lieberman, the white horse. I love it. I love it. I mean, if you understand what I'm saying, the depth of what I'm saying, Rabbi Lichtstein and Rabbi Young, never. They could never equal Rabbi the White Horse or Steve Riskin, a new generation, but Kanayin Hara. All right, we've picked up where we left off. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, I pick up with Chabad and the whole Chabad justification. Be Makarev people, don't worry about Shabbos, etc., etc., and I'll show you the halacha. Now I have a number of freebies. I have too many for this week, so I have for next week as well. I'll meet you downstairs. Okay. These are the sources of yesterday's lecture. Yitzchak, you wanted a copy. Yitzchak, you did not take all Rabbi Weiss yesterday. I save it for you. Does anyone else want a copy of yesterday's, the notes on yesterday? You would like a copy? Give this to Ellie. I wanted to see, okay, that's why you. Again, I hold this up. This is from the Rackman Center of Bar Ilan. Women's issues, what the Batei Dinim, here it's for you. What the Batei Dinim are doing, saying, they're out to modernize the Batei Dinim. I'm not totally happy with their approach, but we got to live with it. Anyone from Chicago, this is a fascinating description of a rabbi in Chicago, many years ago, 100 years ago, and anyone from Chicago will appreciate it. This is a Hesped in memory of Rabbi Leo Young by Rabbi J.J. Schachter. It's very good and summarizes a lot of what we said in class. Behind the scenes, how Israel got back the remains of Zach Bamel. I can't vouch that everything is correct here. We don't know all the details, but it's most of what's written here has to be correct because of my knowledge. This came up from archives, but from Alexander Altman, letters that he wrote to Avraham Yoshua Heschel. If you understand who these people were, very fascinating. This my brother sent me, and I told my brother I'm well aware of it. Rabbi Yehuda Leib Dan Yahya. This is about a student, originally I believe he was in Voloshin, and he was a Talmud of Chaim Soloveitchik, and he became a great Zionist, and he wrote against the anti-Zionism of the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was anti-Zionist, B'lev V'Nefesh. This is a very interesting article reprinted by Dr. Arian Rosmarin from 1944. It's about Reb Chaim Heller, who has arrived in America.
What happened there? He wouldn't give his wife a divorce.
Who are you talking about? But that's a different...
That's the term for which he's so anti-Jewish.
Then she's right if he wouldn't give a divorce. This is Chinuch in Chabad. Anyone going into Chinuch, this is Chabad Guide How to Be a Good Mechanech. This is on the Rebbe and the Munkacha. Very, very interesting. The relationship and pictures, what's coming out of the archives. Whoever dreamt you could get so many pictures of the Munkacha. Anyone here Hungarian, take this home and show it to your grandparents. They'll kiss you. This is Putin and the gift he gave Chief Rabbi Lazar on his 55th birthday. Here is the president of Russia, Lubavitcher Chassid, plain and simple. It's unbelievable what we see in our life, both the hatred for the Jew and the love of the Jew. Here, anyone here who loves Rav Kook, here are pictures of Rav Kook in Yerushalayim, never published before, something unbelievable. By the way, the Kfarim website was established by a subcomrade of mine. It may even be a result of my classes and all the names I mentioned, and he established the website. Here's the KGB belated apology for the persecution and death of the Rebbe's father. That's what we're talking about today, and all the documents here with the apology. Anyone here a Talmud or a Heschel Shechta? Heschel Shechta. Here he is speaking at a Tennisville Siyam HaRambam, and this is with the Chabadnikim. So next time I see him, I'm going to ask him, Mimonavshach, Wunt Vidar. They daven at 10:30 and does Zitzman Mitzayim and Fabrenk Mitzayim and Zak Yibitayim Mitzayim. I don't know. Something's wrong here, but it's beautiful. Rabbi Gershon Shisterman, you gotta read this. The kid, a wild kid, how the Rebbe knew how to handle him with his Kodak. It's called the pivotal Kodak moment. He got a picture of the Rebbe and he's made a living out of it. He got guys to sell it. This is, you know, before the internet, many decades ago. And the Rebbe finds out, you know, it's beautiful the way he handles it. This is Chaim Kudrukman with the Rebbe. When we knew Chaim Kudrukman, when he was Shlich B'nai Akiva to America. Here's Rabbi Tzvi Greenwald. Also, spare the rod, love the child. Fabulous, fabulous. Anyone going into Chinuch. For the first time in history, Russian translation of the entire Rambam into Russian. First time in history. And here they are in Russia. There's Rabbi Lazar. They're celebrating the completion of the translation. And here's the ultimate picture. I told you, I can. How do you know the picture? You saw it already?
Yes.
It's making the rounds. Because it was sent to me by the president's son-in-law's first cousin, who's my dear Talmud, okay? Gershon Stadtmatter sent it to me. There, Ivanka Trump dropping off her daughter Arbaella to board bus to Camp Morasha. So I wrote back to him, one of the Jewish women. There she is. Take a look. If anyone tells me that Gayrit was not good, I'll punch them in the nose. Here, I got to show you what life is about. In Lakewood, they love the fact that I'm honest, and they love my analysis of one of their graduates, David Hartman, but you got to be honest. Here's an article from the mid-50s, it has to be. Mechitzot were erected by the following congregations by their rabbis. Mechitzot, list now, Hicksville, Long Island, Shalit Tzedek, Rabbi Eli Skates, Homestead Jewish Center, Homestead, Rabbi Hai Shapiro, Anshei Emetz, Bronx, New York, Duvi Hartman, put up a mechitza. Wow. And there are other articles here, unbelievable what's come out of the internet. All right, the Chabad criteria to accept or reject a student. The Yankees have a little Pedro, will he match the resemblance? This is dealing with someone in the Yankee farm system who is 5'9 and 163 pounds. Will he be able to make the majors with that type of height and weight? He's a pitcher. Tell me, who hit the home run in the ninth yesterday to tie the score? No? Let me hear the name. Brett Gardner. How tall is he? 5'11. Compare him to Aaron Judge, 6'7. How tall was Phil Rizzuto? 5'7", 5'8", the scooter. Pee Wee Reese, the colonel from Louisville, Kentucky, called Pee Wee. This is the other day, a 64-year-old Brooklyn rabbi hit in the head with a brick. Do me a favor. There's so much going on in the New York area. Please write letters to your acquaintances there. How does a Jew allow himself to stay outside of Israel after the Holocaust? Got it? I don't say it's not perfect here. We also have problems. God have mercy, we have problems. But at least we're Jews. It's a country. It's not Stum.
We fight back.
Not Stum getting hit in the head. Fight back. We fight them out with the helicopter. What went on yesterday with the guys inside tanks with phony. This is a very sad article. Life after the blaze at Kalbach Moshav. Very sad article. And Ellie, this you can have. This is on Rabbi Reuven Katz. There's a reason why I'm giving it to you. Take my word. Please, first of all, let me wish everyone well and all those listening across the wide expanse of our existence. I thank everyone for coming and we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidanya. Outside of the two Kola fellas, we'll have to go back to the base Medrash. Please follow me to my office. And you'll need an umbrella to get in, but maybe it's a little better. And 1 second.
Still here.